Amendment.
I'm going to call this meeting of the House Early Childhood and Family Supports Committee to order for Thursday, March 9th, 2017. We're going to start with a work session, so I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2643. Zena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2643 requires children under age 2 to be properly secured with a child safety system in a rear-facing position. There is a dash 1 amendment that removes the 20-pound weight requirement, and there is a dash 4 amendment that removes the 20-pound weight requirement and creates an operative date of January 1st, 2019. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the original bill, the dash 1 and the dash 4s.
Chair Lively, can I start?
Representative Hayden, yes.
I move to adopt the dash 4 amendments dated 3/23/2017.
Representative Hayden moves to adopt the dash 4 amendments dated 2/23/17. Is there any discussion?
The dash 4 amendments captures what we had discussed when the bill had an original hearing, trying to put in a transition date. There have been subsequent discussions of the transition date, and some of the proponents of the bill say that that's difficult to do. We've been presented a letter signed by multiple people that say a technical transitional time in law is more difficult than putting the date out, which means that we could enact the law, but it would be difficult to enact the law and say that we're not going to penalize people for not following that law. So our choices were to enact the law now, and when it's signed, people would be potentially be able to be cited for this infraction, or we could extend the operative date of when it start to give people that transition time of education from coming from the hospital, getting their car seat, working with many different nonprofit organizations that provide seat belts, so that there would be a time that for the families that have 14, 16, 18-month-old babies that have already been turned around in their car seat, that they would be guaranteed not to be cited for that until their child was, you know, 2 years old or whatnot, and turned around and seated appropriately at that time. I also want to point out that the current standards meet the national practice recommendations for safety with the seat belts. We are not underneath that standard. What we're doing is with this bill is going above and beyond that. I support that, but I strongly support the transition time, which this dash 4 would do.
Members of the committee, if I might just take a second. As chair, I didn't necessarily have to allow Representative Hayden to move the dash 4, but he'd asked me earlier to do that, and I respect that, and so that's the reason I allowed him to do that. So I'm not trying to put any of you in a difficult position or that, one way or the other, but that was just a courtesy to Representative Hayden to do that. And so that's why the dash 4 was moved before we did the dash 1. So I leave it to all of your discretion about what to do or not to do. Is there other discussions about the dash 4 amendment? Representative Hack.
So you know, I love you dearly. but I'll be a no on your amendment. But we've already talked, and you know why.
Yep, I'm good.
I respect you for bringing it forward. And Chair Lively, thank you for, you know, your willingness to hear it today. And so thanks on both parts. But, you know, I'm going to, having been smacked with an airbag myself, I'm going to stick with our original plan.
Any other discussion of the motion to adopt the dash 4 amendment? Okay, hearing none, if the clerk would call the roll, please.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Excused.
Representative Malmstrom?
No.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
No.
Vice Chair Peluso?
No.
Chair Lively?
No.
Dead heat.
That is 4 against and 4 in favor.
So passes.
A duel.
Has to have the majority to pass.
Has to have the majority to pass. It fails on a tie vote. Am I correct on parliamentary procedure?
That would be my understanding, correct?
That would be my motion fails. Sorry. You can challenge
but
it later if you want to.
But one member is not here.
She's excused. We could hold it if you want to until she comes to allow her to vote. That's.
So you're saying even though it got 4-3, it still failed?
No, it's 4-4. It's 4-4. It's tied.
She's Chair Lively.
Let's stand at ease for a second. So
she's testifying. He's still at
Stand at ease.
So is it 4-4? Procedure, a tie vote is a failed vote. It takes a majority in order for the vote to pass. So it failed. Okay. Where are we? Now we're to.
Are you going to take the gavel?
Go ahead.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the -1 amendment stated 1/24/17.
Representative Peluso moves to adopt the -1 amendment stated 1/24/17. Is there any discussion?
Yes, thank you, Chair Lively. I was the chief sponsor of this bill because, for many reasons. One, like everybody on this committee, we're concerned about child safety. But more specifically, I was concerned about the fact that the American Academy of Pediatrics, which guides pediatricians in their advice to new parents, started 6 years ago in 2011 telling new parents to do rear-facing car seats. In my previous job, I would go regularly to hospitals and talk to new parents. Every single hospital I know of in the metropolitan area, at least, it gives handouts and advice about car seats and has for all these years about rear-facing car seats. And after much discussion, I appreciate Representative Hayden's thoughtful discussion that, you know, he ignited with, you know, conversations about this. I refer back to the reassurances from the Oregon State Police and sheriffs that, you know, there won't be tickets given to parents, and I was concerned about that initially. And I also don't think that after 6 years, there's not lots of people that don't know. I think many of these kids that are affected today, they have siblings who were born several years ago, and their parents heard this message, you know, up to 6 years ago. And the new parents, it would be really hard to get out of the hospital with a new baby without being told about rear-facing car seats. So I think 6 years is long enough for our laws to reflect what the recommendations are from all the different care providers, and I don't see any reason to put it off another couple of years.
Thank you. Any further discussion regarding the -1 amendment to the bill? Hearing none, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kangar?
Excused.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, so I will. So now where are we?
It's to me.
Okay, sorry.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Peluso moves House Bill 2643 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Representative Hayden.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to have some discussion on this. This House bill that we're discussing here, we had the vote, which was a tie vote with one member missing. And so I will be a no vote on the bill and work with our Senate colleagues to see if they agree with the transition period if this bill does pass today. I want people to be aware that I'm supportive of the concept, but again, I think parents should have the opportunity without the threat of citation.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Brock Smith.
Just to Representative Hayden's comments,
with a 4-4 split, and we are missing one member. I don't see any reason, but of course it's the authority of the chair, to move forward right now on this when we have another item on the agenda and wait for our colleague representative to come back and see if she's willing to support the Dash 4 amendments, and then of course take a full committee vote on moving this forward.
Thank you for that. Any other discussions on the motion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Bynum?
No.
Representative Hayden?
No.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Kadigar? Representative
excused.
Yes.
Representative Brock Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Hatt?
Yes.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Yes.
Chair Lively?
Yes.
Four against, four in aye.
Motion fails. So we'll move on. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2643.
Do you want to carry it over? Hmm? You can carry it over.
We can do that at the end. Okay. Yeah. And I'm going to open an informational hearing on invited testimony from the Children's Institute. And I would just warn people, we have another bill we're going to consider when Representative Wisnett shows up, and so I may stop during that time to allow him to testify. So the first panel is Dana, Don, and Odie.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, thanks so much for taking the time to hear about preschool in Oregon today. Let me see this. My name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Director of Policy and Program at the Children's Institute. The Children's Institute advocates for investments that in young children that improve kindergarten readiness and third grade success. And we focus on the first 8 years of a children's life because that's when the most rapid period of brain development happens. And no one in this building knows this better than the distinguished legislators in this community who spend many hours a week talking and thinking about this. So I'm just adding one slide image to the mix for you. This is gaps in kindergarten readiness correlated to income. So you can see the lowest income, children in the lowest income households are the furthest behind at kindergarten readiness. Children in the highest income households are the furthest ahead. And this is what investments in early childhood are hoping to address, closing gaps in opportunity before they begin rather than trying to play catch up later in the K-12 system.
Dana, if I can just interrupt.
Yeah.
Representative Wisnett's coming on.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. You didn't have any way to know, and I'll just call you right back up. Thank you very much. So I'm going to close the informational meeting, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2956, and welcome Representative Wisnett to this
stand. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You didn't have to get rid of it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, honorable committee members, thank you for hearing House Bill 2956 and scheduling a work session. I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. I believe this is a simple but necessary bill. Recently, I was reading HRS 326.425, like I do most nights.
I see, yes.
This ORS is titled Early Learning Center, and it describes the purpose, members, and rules of the Early Learning Center. And I discovered a statement that read, no later than February 1st, 2019, the Council shall submit a report to the Interim Legislative Committees on Education and Early Learning regarding the findings and recommendations made as a result of the evaluations performed under this section. As this committee well knows, the Early Learning Division is a new function created in 2013 and has an overall 2017-2019 budget of $414,598,438, significant amount of money. So I appreciate this committee and the chair's work and oversight of the agency. I think that's important. But I think that House Bill 2956 requires the division to conduct an evaluation and submit a report earlier than February the 1st, 2019. The bill asks for a report each odd year and requires an additional evaluation and report of March 2018 to this committee. Thus, this bill just changes the current rules to have a March 18 report and then report to you ever, instead of being the first report being February the 1st, 2019. I don't think the division or anyone would object to doing that. It could be doing in other forms, but the statute states that, and I think it's, we need to clean the statute up.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Wisnett? Doesn't appear to be any.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for hearing and hope you'll move it right along.
Anyone else wishing to offer testimony on House Bill 2956? Doesn't appear so. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2956 and I'll reopen the information hearing. Thank you for your patience.
Sure. This is, again, Dana Hepper, Director of Policy and Program at the Children's Institute. Thanks, Chair Lively and committee members for the time. Since the Children's Institute's founding over 10 years ago, we've been advocating in this building alongside the Oregon Head Start Association for more dollars for Oregon Head Start pre-kindergarten for exactly this reason, to close these gaps before they begin. And in early 2015, the Oregon Head Start Association, the Children's Institute, along with Early Learning Division staff and the input from over 35 organizations and experts in Oregon and across the country, crafted House Bill 3380, which came to be known as Preschool Promise. And we did that for two primary reasons. One was our concern about lack of access to high-quality preschool for children in families who live above the Head Start eligibility of 100%, mostly federal poverty level, but probably did not live in an income bracket where they could afford tuition to high-quality preschool alone. So that was one reason. And the other reason was there were lots of folks in the mix providing preschool in the state. 3,500 kids are in preschools run by K-12 school districts. We have folks in private preschools across the state. And there hasn't been in Oregon a common definition of high quality across those settings. So we wanted something to spark that conversation and have people in multiple settings committed to a common vision for what high quality preschool was. So the legislature passed that legislation in 2015 and allocated the initial $17 million to get it started, as well as expanded our investment in Head Start by $9 million that same year. Despite this clear research and many studies that lead us to understand the importance of the early years, we have a long way to go. Most of the kids in Oregon who live in low-income families do not have access to high-quality preschool, and Oregon ranks 31st nationally in access of 3- and 4-year-olds to high-quality preschool. So we know you're not the Ways and Means Committee or the Revenue Committee, but we always want to make sure everyone understands we're not reaching capacity yet. When we were crafting House Bill 3380, the Preschool Promise statute, the Oregon Head Start Association, Children's Institute, and others really discussed at length the common vision for this program, and I just want to provide some of that background really briefly. One piece of common vision was we wanted to expand access to preschool. That's clear, both in the number of children served and in the income eligibility categories. And that is underway. You've seen some of these from Gwen Bechtel in the division before, but we're reaching a number of children who live above Head Start eligibility in Preschool Promise statutes. We're also reaching a very diverse student population in terms of race, ethnicity, language, and regions of the state. So that's really exciting. Another important piece of the vision was we wanted to create more mixed income classrooms. So we didn't want only the lowest income children to attend preschool with other very low income children only. We wanted children to be in classrooms where the families in that classroom had a mix of incomes. That's, I think, supported by common sense, but also well-grounded in research. And that's also happening with UC. Some of the kids in these classrooms fall into those lowest income families and some into just the next income bracket above. And some have, you know, private pay tuition kids, et cetera, in the same classroom. We wanted to get diverse preschool providers in the mix. So we didn't want the only state-funded preschool in Oregon to be provided only by Head Start. They're a great provider, but they may not meet the needs of all families. So we wanted it to be also in public school buildings and child care centers and child care homes. And that's also really played out in this first year, that there's quite a mix of child preschool settings funded by this initial investment. And we wanted a highly skilled and compensated workforce. We probably can't say highly compensated, adequately compensated workforce. Salaries in early childhood are notoriously low. Many early childhood staff qualify for state or federally funded early childhood programs. That doesn't help in terms of the stress that educators face because of their own income, and it also leads to increased turnover among preschool staff, which isn't good for kids. So we're taking one swipe at that, although we have a long way to go in the early childhood sector as a whole. And finally, we really wanted to build toward a coordinated system so that different preschool providers in an area start to talk to each other, work together, share training resources, get to know each other, and coordinate when it comes to enrolling students in the program, doing recruitment and outreach to families. So that's the goal. Now, not all of these pieces of the vision are 100% checked off the box in year one, but I think we're making headway on all of them in year one and want to stay the course and continue to do more. We did a study of all of the, we talked to every hub in the state and about preschool promise and said, you know, how's it going if you have it? Do you want it if you don't? What's your capacity to expand? And we just got an overwhelming response that folks want to be in the mix. This is a quote from one hub director. We could triple our slots with minimal effort. The need and readiness is that high. Folks are eager to be in the mix. It's one of the benefits of having a mixed delivery system. I'm a preschool provider. I may not have another classroom, but maybe the elementary school down the street has an empty classroom. Maybe a child care provider has slots that aren't filled. If you can maximize all of those resources, you can get more kids served. So we're really excited about that. So there have been successes and challenges in the first year. The early learning division, the hubs, the providers are learning a lot in this first year of implementation. So that's the focus of most of our time today, to hear from the folks who are actually doing the work and the parents who have children enrolled. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Grotting.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Don Grotting. I'm the current superintendent of the Beaverton School District. And I come here before you today to advocate for quality preschool and early learning opportunities for all the children throughout Oregon. As you know, if we can get these students to that critical third grade benchmark, their opportunity to graduate from our high schools is 75% greater. And right now what we have a lot of children coming into our schools that have a significant achievement gap because they have not had the same opportunities as before. I just heard a quote that I think goes with this is, talent is distributed universally, opportunity is not. And so I'm trying to advocate for the opportunity for these kids. The K-12 community can be significant providers in making this happen. It's an opportunity for us to not only do it in the K-12 venue, but also to partner with outside partners to make a difference for these students. Right now, what we are seeing, we're seeing a lot of our students come into our schools that are so far behind academically, their letter number recognition, as well as social and emotional behaviors. I think if you walk into any elementary school in Oregon right now and you ask them what their number one issue is, it has to do with behavior because of the students that are coming in with different trauma that basically our providers, our schools, we're just not ready for. So if we can reach out and engage these students and their families as early as possible, it's the best investment that we can make. I think this strategy can be a game changer for K-12 education in Oregon, as well as for the economy in Oregon. It can help with college and career readiness. If I had my way, I'd lob off the 12th grade year and we'd just make it universal preschool for every four-year-old. And I think we'd make great strides. And just want to say, I know it works. Before I went to the Beaverton School District, I was in David Douglas. We had 7% of our students entering kindergarten being kindergarten ready. After being in preschool and having early childhood education opportunities, 97% of the students entering kindergarten were kindergarten ready. You can't make that up. And then also, once you know that all those students are ready for kindergarten, then it's time to start ramping up the entire K-12 system. So implore you, ask you, whatever you can do. It is a game changer. It is the thing that will turn education around in Oregon. And it's so important that the Beaverton School District Board of Directors just made early childhood education and preschool one of their strategic priorities, even in this time of economic downturn as far as our budget's concerned. Not our economy's not in a downturn, but we have some other issues facing. That's putting a challenge on the K-12 budget. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for coming and testifying. Okay.
Good afternoon. Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Odi Campos, and I am Program Director for the Oregon Child Development Coalition, Migrant Seasonal Head Start, Early Head Start, Preschool Promise, and OPK Provider. My family was a Head Start family since the 80s. My brothers went to Head Start. My sister actually went to OCDC back in 2002. The reason I am here today in front of you is because of the skills that my parents gained through programs like Head Start and early childhood education. So I'm a little nervous tonight. This is my first time. I think my parents are proud that I'm able to actually advocate for families like mine growing up tonight. So I'm here to share a little bit about the collaboration between our OCDC program and the Preschool Promise program. Currently, we serve 80 Preschool Promise slots, 40 in Independence, 40 in Salem. I want to highlight a little bit today, the 40 Preschool Promise slots that we have in Independence. The reason I want to highlight those is because that is actually a braided program that we have. We braided 20 Preschool Promise slots with 20 seasonal Head Start slots through the Migrant Seasonal Head Start program. When Preschool Promise came forward, we saw that as an opportunity for our community and for us to build upon and expand the infrastructure that we have already set through Head Start and Head Start services. In Independence, each of our classrooms has 10 Preschool Promise slots and 10 seasonal Head Start slots in each of the classrooms. So total, we have 4 preschool classrooms in Independence. With these classrooms, all of the services are exactly the same inside of the classroom. We provide the same curriculum. We have the same facilities for the children, the same classroom support. We provide mental health services and support. We provide transportation, health screenings, and dental screenings for our children. And all those are through current and existing partnerships that we have. The health and screenings, for example, are through the Linfield School of Nursing. We partner with them, and then we're able to actually extend that partnership and include our Preschool Promise children. Because of that also, and because of the partnerships, we're also able to provide parent education opportunities. We're able to provide parent meetings for our parents, monthly parent meetings. Access also resources through our existing partnerships like Willamette ESD. And that one for us is a very important one because our partnership with Willamette ESD allows us to provide exceptional services to children with disabilities. And that is one of the target populations for us as a Head Start, is to be able to provide services for those children. Also, having that braided program allows us access to connect two different communities. During our parent meetings, we take advantage of those, and we actually have a time for parents to network and really get to know each other. The reason that's important is because with the Preschool Promise slots, we have children that have up to 200% of the federal poverty guideline. our Head Start families are from 0 to 100% of the federal poverty guidelines. So most of the time we don't have parents that are able to connect and really network. So our parent meetings are an opportunity for them to be able to do that, share their resources, really make that connection, that long-term connection, because for us, we're only there for potentially 5 years. So it's important for us, for those parents, to find their own resources and really make those connections in order to make, in order to be prepared for kindergarten too, because this is all surrounded by preparing our children for kindergarten. The other thing too is it's important to have these preschool promises. Is important because it also provides the opportunity for these families between the 100-200%. What we've noticed in our communities is that a lot of the families are caught kind of an in-between zone where they make too much to qualify for Head Start services, but they don't make enough to be able to provide for that or to pay for that $800 preschool tuition. So preschool promise really opened the door for a lot of our community members and a lot of our families. And because of that, like I mentioned, preschool promise was a great solution to some of those challenges our families were facing. So for us, OCDC is really grateful for the opportunity. We are grateful for the opportunity to provide these services to our community, to our children with disabilities, to our families, because of all the education and advocacy skills that our families get to learn, like mine did. And then also the staff opportunities, because one of the things I think that we sometimes overlook is the opportunities we provide to staff. Because we're able to braid our services, and with Preschool Promise, we had about 10 of our staff, actually 12 of our staff members now have year-round employment. So that's one of the things that we also want to take into account, that being able to provide these services isn't just educational services for our families, but it really benefits the community and the economic development in them too. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you all.
Okay,
Madam Chair. Yes. Yes, what's up next? Okay. So, thank you, Superintendent Grotting. Odie Campos?
Yes.
You're up next.
No, he just went.
Oh, okay. Then I was...
And an excellent testimony it was.
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
Delightful.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Oh, there's a question. Thank you. Yes.
Let me save you.
Save me, yes.
Thank you to all of you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to all of you for your testimony. Superintendent Grotting, thank you for leaving David Douglas. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah.
No, but we got a great replacement. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to kind of ask you to help me draw the graph and help me understand what portion of the pre-K promise helps with readiness. So I kind of broke it out into health intervention, trauma intervention, and academic curriculum. So if you pulled out the academics, what benefit would that be? If you pulled out the trauma, if you pulled out the intervention on, probably, since we always like to talk about teeth here, dental screenings. So yeah. How does it help kids be ready, and in what proportion?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think they're all dependent on one another. For the first time ever, finally, I believe education and the health industry, we're starting to understand each other, and they're each other dependent on one another. If we have students coming in who are not in a healthy environment or do not have good health themselves, their ability to exceed in academics, it's not going to be there. I don't know if I'm specifically asking your question. I really think they're intertwined, and so it's for me, preschool is just not about academics, letter number recognition. It's about the academic part, but also the social and emotional regulation. Mm-hmm. Being able to identify some of our second language students and our students with disabilities at the very earliest stage and engage their families, I think it brings so much dollar benefit to the system if we can identify those strategies that need to help those families and children as early as possible. Yeah. We saw great gains in some of our second language students if we can engage them to help them learn their English acquisition at an earlier age. Those students are going off our second language weighted populations earlier. We're finding that sometimes some of our students with disabilities, if they're identified, that we're lowering our special education populations if we can get to the families and those students as soon as possible. I really think they're absolutely dependent on one another.
And Vice Chair Peluso, Representative Bynum, if I could just add to that, the research backs up what Superintendent Grotting is saying. The research that's been done on early childhood education that shows the huge return on investment, the long-term gains in terms of high school graduation, later income, and just life success. It's research done on high-quality preschool, which is typically defined as including a number of those wraparound and family engagement pieces, as well as strong academics in the classroom. And the research on low-quality preschool is not very strong. Mm-hmm. So Oregon's done a great job in committing to high quality, both with our investment in Head Start, which has clear standards for quality, and our investment in Preschool Promise, which also has high standards for quality. And so Oregon is investing our preschool dollars in the right way. It's a little more expensive up front to do that, but that's what gets you the long-term gains. An investment in a low quality, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 a year program like some Florida or Tennessee has done sometimes, it doesn't pay off in the long run in the way that high-quality preschool does. So all of those things work together. Yeah.
Thank you. Further questions of the panel?
Well, not a question, just a comment. I'm delighted to see the former superintendent of the David Douglas Schools here, and it was a pleasure to see that your wife is involved in similar kind of work on a previous panel.
Oh, great.
A couple weeks ago, so.
Yep.
Thank you. I actually thought she was going to be the representative hitting me over the head for even.
Yeah. I think I did that to your wife.
Thank you.
So we're just going on panel two now.
Okay. Thank you. So next is panel two, Lisa, and is it Dana?
Dana.
Okay. Welcome.
All right. So good afternoon, Chair Lively, co-chairs, co-vice chairs Peluso and Hack. It's a pleasure to be with you here today. And I have the distinct pleasure and honor to represent, again, Preschool Promise and the work that we're doing here as part of the Marion & Polk Early Learning Hub. The slide that was before here from the Children's Institute with the quote from an Early Learning Hub leader, I'm pretty sure I was that one. The fact is, I mean, I don't really know that, but I'm going to say that I was, because that we could triple with the greatest of ease the number of slots here in our community. The need is that great. So I just thank you for your advocacy and the work that you are doing as a part of the overall system. Preschool Promise has been just an incredible value to our committee, or to our community. We have been able to really come together as a community in a way that I don't think would have been possible without the intention behind some of the initiatives that we have running. And I know I've talked with you about those before, specifically around kindergarten partnership and innovation, and also with our child care networks, which is us working with the community to help ensure that we have the quality early learning environments. The work that we've been doing over the past 2 years in that realm really builds upon the system infrastructure that we're all investing in as a state. It was bringing the community together to focus in on Preschool Promise, and also we did this as a tight community, including Odie, who was in the panel before, along with probably 15 to 20 other early learning professionals, to really define what it is we wanted to see as a result of Preschool Promise. That has gone on to serve us very well. We have a steering committee made up of early learning providers that helps to guide how we are implementing and how we are in reinforcing the work that we're doing with Preschool Promise. As part of the steering committee and the the community-wide commitment to preschool promise, we developed a common pre-application process where providers would use the shared pre-application to have families indicate their interest in a program that would best meet their needs. This is somewhat unique. Other preschool promise areas are doing something similar, but this is something unique, certainly in our community, to work together on the application and the recruitment of families. And we are in the process now of revising that pre-application process and making it even stronger so that we can, across our community, share about the opportunities that are available for families. With Preschool Promise, we were granted 330 enrollment opportunities for our community. And just to reiterate what has been shared before, in terms of being able to widen the availability and the opportunities for families up to 200% of the poverty level, we have been able to serve an additional 228 children that would not otherwise qualify for a program. And I just want to also underscore that these are high quality programs as well. So of the across our poverty levels, between 101 to 200%, 70% of our 330 are in that bracket. That's very significant for us to be able to serve more children and more families. It's also significant that we have, at our last count, we have 94 on a waiting list for Preschool Promise across the continuum of the providers that we have. Not all providers are taking waiting lists as well, so I think that number could actually be higher than it is today. The other thing that I think is very unique about the work that we are doing in our community, and Dana shared that the intention with this is to have preschool in a variety of different settings and with different types of providers, and that just being a real value to families, that they have choices in being able to go to a provider that best meets their cultural or their linguistic or just their family values. So as you can see, we have providers across the Marion and Polk geographic area. We have a tribal program. We also have at Chemeketa and at Western Oregon University. We've got programs in each of those sites, which allows us to for students to have access to Preschool Promise. We also have center-based, which includes language-rich environments. We have a Russian program. We also have a dual language program. And we also have many of our providers. We have family child care providers. And that's been a huge investment that we have made into the fabric of our Preschool Promise. We also have locations in two school districts, as well as community-based organizations or Oregon Coalition, which Odie spoke to just earlier. So we are very proud of the mix of providers that we have, and each of the programs have been able to weave Preschool Promise into their program in doing so in a way that's going to better meet the needs of families in our community. Wanted primarily to talk with you today. I've invited Dana Young, who is our Preschool Promise Coordinator for the Marion and Polk Hub, to talk about the investment that we're making specifically in our home-based providers and really seeing this as a workforce investment that we are making.
So, could I ask a question first? So the waiting list, I'd like to understand, because some do have and some don't. So what's the expectation when people go on there, or what's expressed to the people when they go on to a waiting list?
Well, the waiting lists are there. They certainly, if often children will move out of the program, and so then the children on the waiting list would be next in line.
But they understand when they get on
the
waiting list.
They do understand. Correct. And we work really hard to work with our providers to, you know, help connect them with other resources that might meet their needs as well.
Great. So, thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and the rest of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Jung. I'm the Preschool Promise Coordinator for the Marion and Polk Early Learning Hub. And I am here to focus about the Preschool Promise investment. As you guys know, Preschool Promise is in different types of settings. One of the main ones is in-home family child cares, centers, and nonprofits. And I will put them in one category because as a nonprofit, resources are limited, and the ability to hire staff, improve a lot of the stuff internally, it's sometimes really hard. So just to go ahead and go over three key areas from the business point of view, all of our Preschool Promise provider receive startup funds, and that money went for food, to improve the classroom, improve curriculum. We had a lot of in-home family child care, so they wanted to buy curriculum, but they couldn't afford it. We were able to go ahead and use some of the startup funds to do it, as well as getting them insurance, business insurance. Some of them didn't have business insurance or commercial insurance for their vehicles. So we were able to go ahead and bring that protection to them to be able to be more business-like in getting them business insurance and getting them protected. We've done a great deal of professional development. All of our providers were invited to go ahead and do a TS Goal training so they could be trained in doing assessments now. For them, that was very new, but we were able to invest that money and the time to go ahead and do that, which when we're talking about these buckets in different areas that Preschool Promise is touching, it's really not just impacting our Preschool Promise kiddos, it's impacting the kiddos at their entire center, their entire in-home family child care, or like, for example, the TS Goal training. Once a provider gets trained, we're not asking them just to go ahead and do assessments on our Preschool Promise kiddos. These are all of the kiddos in that center. So it allows us to go ahead and detect if we need to do any intervention before the kiddo goes to kindergarten. We've launched one of the only early childhood education college level classes in Spanish. This is something especially for in-home family child care providers so they can continue that education during the weekend, which has been awesome. And then we have, in collaboration with Chemeketa, we have a cohort which allows our Spanish lead teachers to be able to continue that education, and those classes are held on Fridays afternoon and Saturdays. It's an accelerated program, but it definitely gives that opportunity for that person to continue their education. I mean, they spend a lot of hours during the weekday with the children. We're providing them with that opportunity to continue their education. My position, we do a lot of different stuff. You know, we make sure that we continue professional development, the businesses are thriving, and then also the health and well-being of the child. So we have collaborated to offer dental screenings to all of our Preschool Promise providers, especially at our in-home family child cares. Once again, that's a service that before you would just not see in in-home family child care unless the business owner took it upon themselves to contact these different resources. Now we're coming in, sending out those registrations, and offering it to all of the children in there. Literacy backpacks. We've been able to do backpacks for all of our Preschool Promise kiddos, and once again, non-Preschool Promise kiddos too, because we want everyone to get a backpack. So that has been... You know, that backpack project was a project, but it's because we wanted to make sure there was equality, right? That no kiddo, because it was a purple backpack and something so small, but we wanted to make sure that no child was left behind or wondering, why is this kiddo getting a purple backpack and where's my backpack? So that has been our goal with that backpack, is to make sure that we increase parent engagement. The parents are taking their kiddos to the library, that they're reading to their kiddos. So those backpacks get refilled with books every month at in-home family child cares and at other sites. We do it on special occasions, students, and on some of our bigger sites, like Salem-Keizer School District, we were able to bring SMART into their program, so the SMART program in there, and just improve literacy, and we are connecting them with a lot of resources. Going back, you know, as a small business owner myself, you know, looking at Preschool Promise really brought a lot of small business stability to a lot of our smaller nonprofits and in-home family child cares. And how does it do that? Because it allows us to be, they know that there's a check coming at the end of the month, whereas before they were charging by hour. Mm-hmm. They were charging, their pricing was all over the place. We were able to bring some balance on that, which I think is amazing, because now they know that there's a check coming, so they can actually focus on taking care of the children, right? Another thing, just to touch on our families within the 100 to 200% level, when a family doesn't qualify for any of the programs out there in the community, they're going to start looking for which lady can take care of their child at the lowest price. And sometimes the quality is not there. So with Preschool Promise, we're able to bring the quality. We're not putting our in-home family child care providers in that awkward situation of charging really low rates because they have a heart and they want to help a family. Now they're able to use Preschool Promise to maintain those rates and that pricing and not sell themselves lower. So we've done a lot of technical assistance on the business area. You're talking from pricing, marketing, technology, how should they use the phone, payroll. We brought in an accountant to talk to them about expenses and all of that stuff. We've also made connections with other nonprofits and programs such as Merit, so they can continue getting the business technical assistance. Also using some other programs available for them as business owners, like the IDA program, the Individual Development Account program. We've made, you know, we're great partners with the Child Care Resource and Referral, and they're also looking, you know, that's another resource for them. And then we also have contacted the Department of Revenue, our good friends over there, and just making that contact that if we need them to go ahead and come and talk to our small business owners about taxes and what does that look like, we can do that. I can go on and on, so we'll just go straight to the successes here. Some of the successes that we have seen in home or family child care is the business registration. Some these folks are getting registered as businesses. They're protecting themselves by becoming an LLC. They're hiring their first employee. They're able to provide better wages, which better wages equals better quality for our children because employees are not disgruntled getting paid lower wages. Ability to offer benefits. We talk about business insurance and business bank accounts. Right? They have a separate bank account for their business. So really it has Preschool Promise has really done a lot in helping families, but also I feel that the investment that we're making, we're also improving them as a business, which I think is amazing. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair Lively. Again, I'm so excited. I get to say this is my early learning hub. And I'm just so darn proud of you guys and the work that you have done. I mean, I think it's important that we remember that the Preschool Promise is only about a year in, and the amount of work that has been done is absolutely amazing. You know, above and beyond the great work that the hubs have done, I just have to commend you for just stepping up and making sure that it's done and it's done right. Dana, I know you haven't been involved not even for that entire year. It's less than that. And the work that you have been able to do is just absolutely amazing. And I had the opportunity to meet with Dana and talk to her about the business side. And I'll be honest, that had not sunk in with me until we had that conversation. Mm-hmm. And she really brought up a lot of points that I went, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought about that piece. We were so busy, you know, thinking about the Preschool Promise and all of those things about meeting the needs of kids, and we didn't think about, oh my gosh, there are a lot of logistics that need to happen for our preschool. So again, I just can't say enough good things about the work that you've done and your dedication, and not only good work, but quality, solid You're just a class act all the way around. So I'm just proud to say you're my hub.
Yeah. Thank you.
Really to be commended. It's tremendous work it is. Representative Kenny Guy.
Well, I just want to ditto that and say that the other piece of this is supporting women and minority-owned businesses in our state. And so it's a really big service to that. So I agree, and I love how you're color-coordinated with me.
And they are together.
Yes, they are. Duly noted.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. And I do believe you have a letter from a parent in your packet, so I'll just sort of leave on that note. I think this letter really personifies why we're doing the work that we're doing. This mom would not have had access to a preschool program for her little one, and it really speaks to the value of the up to 200% and meeting that cultural need and really helping, and her already seeing some growth in the social emotional in particular, and she called that out. And this little one's going to be ready for kindergarten.
That's great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Good work. Okay, so we have next panel. Is it Eliza and Sadia?
Oh, Sahi.
Sahi.
Did you get that from the...
Okay, just before you speak, just introduce yourself for the record, please. Whoever wants to start.
Hello, my name is Bashir. I am the executive director for Center for African Immigrants and Refugees of Oregon in the East County, Portland. Thank you, Chair Lively, and the rest of the committee members. We're glad to be here. With me is Sadia. Sadia is a mother of eight kids. She happens to have a kid in our preschool promise program, and she excited to be here today for the first time to talk to you, and she will say a few things.
Hi, I'm Eliza Elway. I have a daughter at Yonkala Preschool. If it weren't for the preschool there, she would not be in preschool because we just recently moved here and we weren't even going to look into school or anything for her. I was signing my son up for kindergarten and somebody came to me and actually told me about the preschool and she was there. She got super excited. So we got her signed up and we got her in and she absolutely loves it. But, if it weren't for that, we wouldn't be able to go because, one, we couldn't afford it, and then, two, it would be too far from where we're at. The preschool is at my son's kindergarten, and having it there, they're able to walk to school together, and they get picked up together. They love it. They talk about it. It's like the same school to them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, aniga waxaan ahay hooyo tabacnu kale. Gabadheedu waxay aatay kirikaadan preschoolka. Ta kirikaadanade waxba ma taqaano. Aydoo waxba aqoonay waxay aatay kirikaadanka. Hadda mida preschool yaado aydoo akhriska taqaano wax kasta taqaano we know everything. Kubi kasi hore kiriga oo aaday first grade waxay ka saayeen mala. Preschoolka program kan waxa weyn oo nootra maadaama anaga luqada ka seenay luqadu naga caawiya.
My name is Sadia, mom of seven. I have a kindergartner at PBS, and I also have a preschooler at Cairo Academy. To tell you the difference, my child that goes to kindergarten now did not have the opportunity to go to preschool. But when you compare the two now, the one at the preschool is doing much, much more better than the one at the kindergarten because she didn't have the opportunity to go to preschool in the first place. When you are building a house, you start at the foundation. We would not be sitting here comfortably if this building didn't have the foundation that it has. I am worried about the kids that did not have opportunity to go to preschool in my family. I'm worried about those who were born in the refugee camps that have come here, that have not been to formal school before. I'm not worried about the one that is attending at the preschool. And so that is what the preschool has done for us as a community. We are disconnected from the mainstream schools. Our students are struggling. And this has given us some hope, finally, to make sure that those at the preschool are doing fine.
And I kill you, my dad. Badana jirta ilmo hal kufra hassan oo everybody idaaya habi yaan kuna wilmi wa abris. Dad badan wa kili gayma because oo yoyin waxba kaseena anna. Preschool ko wa ubahana oo yoyin waxba kaseena ingiris ku hadli kirna anna. Ilmi yoyin loogad Somalia ko yoyin loogad Somalia ku hadla kiri gayana kili gaya.
And I'm not just speaking for me. I'm speaking for a lot of moms out there who are just like me. This is our only investment. Our only investment is in the kids. And we hope that we get that opportunity to invest our kids.
Ha ilmi luqada Soomaaliga guriga aan ku barnay ayo Soomaaliga ku hadlay kirigaana markaan geeyna macallimada lama qabsan karaan ee macallimad wax ma weydiin la kiriga pre school ka markay tagaan ingiriiska ka baranayaan luqada wax ka baranayaan akhriska wixii dhan ayo fiican ingiriiska saayeen oo tagaan kirigaadanka.
Well, what used to happen before is we used to send them to kindergartens with just the Somali language. They were not speaking English. And so the teachers struggled, the kids struggled in class. And so there was no connection between the two. Now with the preschool, we are giving them the opportunity to not just be ready, but to be linguistically ready for school, for kindergarten.
Ha, ilmakalan wa no joar, ina no si bot gresino, no si... No, schoolat kono si wenesin wa ubahan.
And we have other kids that are coming, that are there at home now, sitting at home. And so we should be speaking about expanding. We should be speaking about giving opportunity to those that are at home and not those. Why about those that are already in class now? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was wonderful. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say one more thing. I didn't
sure.
have the. We have two categories of kids, especially with immigrant kids, the African immigrant kids. There are those that were born in the refugee camps that did not have the opportunity to go to school, to go to formal school. And now we have those that are born here, but then do not have the opportunity. And so we recently finished on our research, and 93% of students at PBS, and the Somali students are failing in math according to the standards here at the state. 87% are failing in reading standards. And that's because of the two categories that are not school ready. Those that did not have the formal schooling opportunity back home, and those that were not given the opportunity here, despite the fact that they were born here in this city.
Really?
Thank you. I just wanted to point
school
that out.
School at Katalma, Waitrop Grand, Somali community, Adana High School, because when you get Sabti, we had Makasa Africa, Lakane, Lokati Makasa, school at Kedrop Grain.
And that ultimately becomes an issue when students drop out of the school because they have struggled, because they have not
been.
Because there's a disconnect between the schools and the community itself.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair Lively. So I have a couple questions, if I can. For Sadi and maybe both, the connection between parent and the school, how has that been? Are there improvements that we could make? Do you feel like making that connection, because you both have kids in kindergarten and in preschool, is there a difference between making the connection at the preschool level versus waiting till the kindergarten level or later? Can you talk just briefly about what has that been better?
I know for us, my son went to kindergarten TK in California, and for the parents, we weren't connected whatsoever. I never knew hardly anything. The communication was terrible. Mm-hmm. And I know having my daughter in preschool here, the communication has been amazing. There's so many opportunities to hear and talk about what's going on in the school and how they're doing. For us, it's been completely different.
Alamid maray qaar ma bis fahanan ma preschool ka first grade sidii oo kala hadu waxaan qabaa inuu first grade aada we don't read nothing we don't write we don't read macallimiinta anaga oo tagna ila aan dad isfahmay maneen.
We go to the schools but the biggest issue is the cultural misunderstanding. between the two, between the school system and the community. That's the biggest difference. For me, I believe that learning is culturally and socially mediated. And so this disconnect owing to the language barriers, owing to cultural barriers. And so because of those barriers, there's a disconnect.
I have a follow-up.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Lively. So question two, Sadi. If there is something we could do differently, or that she would like to see done differently, or something, if you could, in a perfect world, you could say, do this to make this better, what would it be?
No, in all school, British school, no see you in school key.
We need the preschool opportunities. We have other kids at home. If I were to ask something of you, I would ask you to expand what we have now. So we have those kids at home going to school as well. That's all.
Thank you. Both. Thank you for being here.
Shukran. And thank you. Thank you, Shukran.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you, Chair Lively and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Gwen Bachtel, and I'm sorry, that was emotional for me. And I am the Preschool Promise Coordinator with the Early Learning Division. And David Mandel sends his regards. He said he's been spending a lot of time here, but not here today. I know it's on the agenda that I have 1 minute to wrap it up, so I'll do my best. I think I feel honored and humbled to be a part of these panelists here today. And I didn't realize that it's so hard for me. And that's because, you know, when we have strong legislation, like we have with Preschool Promise or House Bill 3380, and it's sort of, to me, it's like it's in black and white. But to now hear what communities have done with families, with providers, and the work that they've done in their communities, and they've really brought that bill to color. And it's in HD for us here today. So that's exciting for me. So now we'll get to this. So, and the panelists are a reminder to me that the real power and impact of our work is achieved one child, one family, one provider, one community at a time. The impact is tangible when community members have aligned goals and that the systems are aligned to support those goals. And as communities prepare for next year's program, collaborative work is already happening between Head Starts and Hubs. The focus is on joint recruitment materials, explaining program options and support parent choice and equity. We have shared waitlist information and other strategies that support the needs of the community and ensure mutual enrollment successes. The first year of implementation, we've had many successes, as you can see, but there's also been some bumps in the roads. This is a very new approach. The mixed delivery came with some challenges. But we've all kind of worked together and tried to figure that out and really just really, you know, continually improving our delivery and our supports to the families and communities. We look forward to the opportunity to continue this meaningful and important work, and I thank you for your support of early learning. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I have a comment.
Yes.
It's just fabulous to see such passion behind the work. Thank you so much.
I sit in my cubicle, you know.
Your passion comes through.
To come and have this experience, so thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else while this informational hearing is still open? If not, I'll close the informational hearing, and I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2643. Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side on House Bill 2643, I serve notice of reconsideration.
Thank you, Representative Huffman. So based on that, we will be carrying this bill over for reconsideration.
Right now?
No, we have to carry it over for reconsideration. Any other business to come before the committee?
I don't think so, Mr. Chair.
Well, you could bring something up if you like, John.
I think we've done enough today.
Okay. I mean, we have a few more minutes if you'd like to. Yeah. Okay. We'll adjourn. I'd like to. Yeah. Okay. 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 Really.